Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of It's Not My Fault, the OSG podcast is not popular. We are on episode 251, somehow. My name is Helen.
My name is Justin.
Justin, I gotta tell you, this is the third podcast episode I've recorded in 6 days.
How did that happen?
My throat is getting kind of tired.
How did you let that happen? How?
So I saw the movie Your Letter, and my friend Adam and I wanted to talk about the manhwa for a while, and so we were going to talk about it after the movie. But he's like, I can maybe do Tuesday as I'm packing up for Anime NYC. And I'm like, we will do this when you get back. And then we'd push the manga in your ears recording back a little bit. So that was, first it was Tuesday, then it was Thursday, and now it is now Sunday.
Okay, but it has nothing to do with me. It's not, we didn't go off schedule. Why is it our fault?
It's not our fault. I'm just very tired, and I still need to edit that manhwa episode. It's like, oh yeah, I keep forgetting I need to do that.
Then all right, we gotta get this going on the show on the road then. What have you been up to aside from editing or potentially editing podcasts?
Not editing it yet, but for our latest manga in your ears episode, one of the titles we were talking about was A Witch's Life in Mongol, or A Witch in Mongol. And so now that I've read more of the manga, I started watching the anime since, you know, I just don't want to spoil myself, you know? I wanted to read the manga first. And so I've seen one episode of the anime. I'm definitely going to see more. I just haven't had time to see it yet. And yeah, this is good. I think this is a fascinating period of history. I am not super familiar with the history of Mongolia and people of the steppes. But even I'm not super familiar with it, is apparently more familiar than most folks. So a whole bunch of people are like, well, I don't know what's going to happen next. Well, I'm over here, I'm looking at like the cast of characters, and I'm like, oh yeah, I see a familiar name amongst the sons. I know he's going to be important later. Maybe not in this story, but in world history. So that's kind of funny. And admittedly, most of my knowledge comes from A, the episode that Crash Course World History did 14 years ago on it, which covered a whole bunch of Mongolian history. And I also listened to an audiobook from the great courses called, I think, The Barbarian People of the Steppes, which taught me about, before the Mongols, there have been a lot of invasions by the nomadic peoples across other non-nomadic parts of the world. So if folks are enjoying that anime, I highly recommend checking out the real world history as well, because yeah, it's just fascinating. So I've been reading and watching all of that, and one of my emails from the DC Public Library was talking about, oh, here's a service we're connected with called Comics Plus, which I hadn't heard of before, and I was scrolling through there since I've been using Hoopla like a couple days earlier, but Hoopla has a limit. You can only check out 5 titles a month, and I hit that real fast. And as I was waiting for, I'm hoping it resets on the first of every month, not 30 days. As I was browsing through Comics Plus, I'm looking at their titles, and they had a bunch of stuff from Kodansha and Tokyo Pop, which is pretty typical. But this is the one subscription app of this type I've seen, you know, like Hoopla, like other things your library might have, that has books from Yen Press in it. I've never actually seen that before. So I am just going through and I am just binging on some, titles of questionable quality there, but you know.
Titles of questionable quality. Can you at least share one of your titles of questionable quality? Be courageous. You got this.
Questionable quality going in 2 different directions. One of them is the Tokyo Pop one, reincarnated in a mafia dating sim.
That's from the 7th Time Loop creator, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, because I was looking at it, I was looking at the name Toku Amikawa, I'm like, this looks familiar. Oh yeah, it is the 7th Time Loop, and she's done, like, a couple other things as well that I'm blanking on.
Yeah, there's one other title on Geneva Club.
Yeah, that's probably the one I'm thinking of, and I know there's at least a 4th thing that's gotten adapted as a manga, because I was looking up to see just how many titles she had, but that one hasn't been licensed. She just has a lot, and the novels all appear to be concurrently ongoing, which is impressive. And then I also checked out one, which I had to because of the title, was like The Perverted Doctor's Medical Record, or The Doctor's Perverted Medical Record. The doctor's not perverted. However, his patients keep doing things like sticking their dicks in slimes. So, you know.
Or doing other ranchy things that I've read. Yeah, I've read that too.
Yeah, they're doing stuff like that. So, if you liked, shit, what was the one with the brothels? The brothel rating one? Interspecies Reviewers? Yeah. If you liked that one, you will probably like this one as well. It is the same kind of tone of, it's silly, we're taking this kind of seriously, but it's silly. Kind of
Look, sometimes,
jazz.
look, so, just saying, size matters, you know. I'm not going to imply or elaborate. You have to read the manga to understand what I mean by that.
Yeah, I did lose it at the chapter title that was Boon Runes and Goon Runes for like magical tattoos. I was just like, what? I was like, okay, I need to go share this with folks in some Discords like right this second. Yes, this will mean that I was checking out something with questionable titles, but
Yeah, you
this is
see,
silly, stupid enough, it needs to be
that's what I'm
shared.
saying. Like, it may be questionable, but some of these questionable tales are actually really funny.
Yeah. Oh no, I'm not doubting that they're funny. It's just Justin, I don't like having to have the conversation of people to explain. Yes, I'm asexual and aromantic. However, sometimes I read the perverted stuff. That is a conversation most people are not able to comprehend. Fortunately, however, you are a broad-minded individual who's just like, so you read stuff depend that has no bearing on
Just don't bore me, please. Don't bore me.
it. Justin's like, I don't care what's in here as long as it's not boring.
Well, generally, if it's too questionable, I'll be like,
Okay.
nah. All right, I'm gonna talk a long time. I apologize to all our listeners and Helen to have to listen to my anime New York City spiel. But yes.
Actually, you should be apologizing to yourself because you're the one who's going to have to edit this.
Oh, duh.
I'm editing manhwa in your ears, not this one. And manhwa in your ears, thankfully, be only about an hour long. This, I've told Justin I'm going to start getting grumpy if we go over an hour and a half,
Yeah,
so.
unfortunately, this is on track to go way over an hour. Anyway, so let's get this going. So yes, I went to Anime New York City again this year. It is hard to describe the experience compared to last year. Last year was a little bit different, or mostly I was in a different mental state compared to last year. I'm not going to elaborate that much, but yes, things happened last year that were personal. So just a little bit different compared to last year. I
Oh, I
did.
do want you to touch on what was the experience like as press, since Lindsay of ANN was saying that it's kind of a hot mess if you're attending as press.
Well, I probably again, I didn't submit my press info until like sort of late. I don't know if they've been just saying earlier, if you reach out earlier, you get more interviews and stuff like that, or you need to be a certain review account, et cetera. But I submitted my press pass late, so no interviews or anything like that. I just like I do have something with a company that I just set up myself, because they were in the they had a booth and everything, so I just did it myself. Hopefully I can get that up this week. Hopefully, fingers crossed. But other than that, I can't really go into details. But I just know that over the past couple of years in general, like obviously, just press is just not the same as it used to be. I can imagine it's not the same. It wasn't the same this year either, in terms of getting set up with Japanese talents or Japanese guests and everything. Because there's just
Yeah, Lindsay was saying
more
things.
restrictions, I think. Now there's been more restrictions over the past couple of years than usual, so.
Yeah, Lindsay was saying things like not being informed that our interview time had changed, time or locations.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's bad. That's not good. The problem is that that's also probably dictated by the Japanese guests. Like, they may just have something come up or whatever. It's weird. It's I
A communication, Justin.
right.
This is their
That
job.
is indeed their job. Oh, I will also add that yeah, these things happen last minute, so it's not obviously acceptable, but I can definitely go with the fact that things literally change at the last minute, but these need to be communicated, so but yeah, I just I don't want to. That's separate from like my press issues. Obviously, I'm pretty sure there are other issues that have occurred if you were pressed this year that were totally different from mine. So I'm not gonna I can't really add anything to that moving forward. So just go back to my experience, which again,
Getting rained on.
4 days. Oh yeah, rain. Oh God. Thursday I think was the worst day. And it's funny. Oh, wait, was it? Yeah, I think it was Thursday. Because and funny enough, it's obviously the lighter day because there's really nobody wants to do no industry people want to do panels that day, which is gonna come into play later when I talk about stuff that happened over the weekend. Nobody wants to show up on Wednesday, Thursday. So I got my press pass on Thursday. Obviously, just went around, didn't buy too much stuff. I bought a few things, which I regret. I'll elaborate about that soon enough. Went to the exhibit hall, went to the gaming area a little bit, took some pictures and all that good stuff. Took put Instagram and all that social media stuff. Then at one point I tweeted or sent to the social medias about my presence at AMUX City. About yeah, most not all news is gonna be posted regarding manga, light novels, and maybe some other stuff. So put that out there, thinking like, yeah, you know what? Especially Friday, it's gonna be like really packed in sort of like industry panels. I wouldn't think I was catching. I didn't think I'd be making all the panels. Little did I know that something would come up that would render that sort of moot in a way I was not expecting.
Is this how you forgot your charging cable?
Not that. I'll elaborate soon enough. But yeah, Thursday happened. I think it was like 6-ish, where it just was pouring, like nothing else. Like granted, over the summer in New York City, it's just miserable. Just rains and just floods, and it's great. It's fantastic. It's get your raincoat. Your raincoat's not gonna be good enough. Sorry. I did feel.
Yeah, I did see Caitlin of AniFem talking about, like, she said something along the lines of, "This is not a sponsored post. However, my backpack from such and such brand kept my stuff completely dry in that downpour," which sounded like a pretty good review to me.
I needed something like that for my backpack. It would have saved my copy of Cleaver Test. Oh, poor Cleaver Test.
No.
Alicia and the baby, they did not survive the trip back home.
No.
It's just it's nice, and it's a great the struggles of the hero. They're really encapsulated this volume. I was tempted to just buy another one while I was there, but I changed my mind. Just be like, yeah, I made the mistake of buying it. I'll just have to live with it. It is what it is. But yes, I did feel sorry for all the people who brought umbrellas. They were useless against the rain. I did take a good shot of the there was like a poster of the Firefly Wedding and Kagurashi anime poster they have on Crunchyroll with the rain in the background, and then the lighting with the I had the Anime New York City or the Javits Center had the poster or the image boards just with the ads and everything, so just flashing. It was kind of cool. That was nice. Other than that, it was miserable getting back home. Especially as the trains at one point, the one train I wanted to take back home, they it has so much water leaking in the station that they just could not actually go, and especially like a further uptown to where I needed to go, they just could not actually run any trains on that line. So I had to go to another line. So that I didn't get back home to like kind of later than I was hoping for. So that
The
sucked.
New York City subway confuses me in so many ways.
Yes, sir.
And I'm not talking about getting around. I'm just like,
No.
damn, y'all live like this?
Hey, I get you. You get used to it. Obviously, I lived here long enough, so you just get used to it. And
Don't settle for
then
less, Justin. There's better.
personally, I always followed the logic of if you're on the west side, I understand. I'll figure it out. East side, good luck. I'll figure out nothing. I'm not gonna figure out anything. But generally, I've been used to how Manhattan works. So I if I long as long as you say okay, excuse me. Okay, I need to get to this station. So if I take the 16, the six line train to this stop, and I can transfer over to take the one or the two, whatever, and then we're good. That's all I need to know. Perfect. I can figure it out from there. So yeah, I mastered MTA just like that. Boom. But okay, but that was my Thursday. It was nothing happening on Thursday. Friday, however, I was warned about this. I didn't look at the schedule at the time. I think it was like a week or so ago. My friend had he also went to the convention. He had warned me that the Friday schedule was gonna be packed, and not even just industry stuff. We had I think he got he Akiko Higashimura's panel was happening that Friday. We had Shihei Lin, the editor for like Spy Family, Dandadan, and Dan, stuff like, and I think other popular manga plus titles or I think Jump Plus titles had a panel on Friday, so it was pretty packed. And I didn't realize how packed it was, so I finally started formulating a schedule myself. And I was like, oh man, I might just have to miss a panel. So my post about being at AMUX City and thinking I'm gonna cover most of not all of the manga light novel news was looking pretty prescient, but again, not It was not, especially for Twitter, or I'm going to call it X going forward, particularly for X users, it turned out to be perceived in a way I was not expecting. So I would say I was going through the panels. I started with the, it was Counter first. Actually, I can't remember off the top of my head exactly. Let me see if I can quickly pull up my Friday schedule. Because it was a long, it was just like panel. I know Counter was first. He has some pretty good announcements that we'll get to later in the whole Animatic City licenses section. He had a good amount. Let's see. So yes, first was Kana, then Dark Horse. Then I ended up just sneaking out to Bang Zoom for a bit because it was like a kind of a down period. So I said, oh, just see how they talk about dubbing and everything. So that was pretty neat. Then went to Seven Seas industry panel. Then my Mavis had their panel. Then Tokyo Pop. And then went to the whole, oh God, we have like these two, like three, actually was this, Tokyo Pop was also part of it, but we had three different panels all on the same time period, 5:30, 6, and 6:15. So I knew Omoi wasn't going to happen because they already like sent me a press release ahead of time, so I just had to just leave that there and schedule it in advance. So okay, that's fine. That's all nice and booked, so I thought. So I went up, go to Tokyo Pop, so I got all of the news from Tokyo Pop out of there, and that was good. Then Kodansha happened. And then I think at one point I was treating like a Kodansha Print Club title announcements. I was then going to tweet out, I think, one other Print Club announcement or the new actual license? And no, I think it was a Print Club title because it was one title that was announced for Print Club. I made a mistake with the, I typoed on one of the author names, so I was going to delete it. But did not get a chance to delete it, as I thought. I thought I caught it in time, did not catch it in time. So I tweeted it again. Then once I tried to tweet the new license announcements, something happened. Buffer would not let me tweet it. At the time, I had no idea if it was a social media thing or whatever. So I ended up sending a tweet again, only to realize it was going through a Mastodon. So I was like, what's happening here? So I ended up just going directly to Twitter to just post stuff, and then Twitter said, you cannot, not something in effect, you can't tweet anything. Post not sent, I think something along those lines. I was like, what is happening here? This has never happened to me before. Had no idea what was
happening. I just remember you messaging me and saying, well, I guess Twitter doesn't get to hear about Ashita no Joe. And on Blue Sky, people are... Hajime no Ippo. And on Blue Sky, folks are just like... Hajime no Ippo. Yelling about it.
Hajime no Ippo.
Hajime no Ippo, yeah. And folks over on Blue Sky are just losing their minds over it, and Twitter is just not getting any of that.
No, there were people tweeting about it for sure. At least for, obviously, our audience. We could not send anything from the account because we were just... I was just totally blocked. It appears Twitter had sent me on timeout. I had no idea I could actually put on timeout like this. I go back to the fact that once again, you Animatic City scheduling these energy panels all at once is a detriment. I don't think it happened this badly last year, but then at the same time, I'm pretty sure I tweeted a good amount last year and it was not as bad. So that already suggests that Mr. Musk and his desire to limit people, us normal people, from tweeting if you don't get a blue check mark, it really came back to bite me right there.
Charitably, Twitter is telling you, okay, you need to stop tweeting and go touch grass. Look, uncharitably, nah, it's like, fuck you, pay me.
So I go back to my whole thing about warning the followers in advance that, oh yeah, I'm not going to be able to tweet most of the announcements, thinking, no, it's because I'm not going to be at these panels. I'm probably going to miss them all. Yes, I got to all the panels, but no, Twitter was going to not let me post the news. That's why I just called it X the whole weekend, just because of that. And that unfortunately also affected how I posted over the weekend, because I thought I came back on from the Empress's panel the next day. And by the way, I couldn't tweet. After I scheduled it in advance, I could not announce Omoi stuff on Twitter because I ran into the tweet limit.
Even though you'd scheduled it in advance. Yeah,
scheduled in advance. I'm buff. I scheduled it in advance, but I obviously it was just scheduled, so it ran into the whole tweet limit. So it obviously Twitter didn't know. So.
And you didn't schedule it in app. Okay, yeah, gotcha. Yes. The way you can. Mm-hmm.
So
I really wish that Blue Sky would do that, just so I could like have my 11:30 p.m. shitpost thoughts and like schedule them for the next morning instead of trying to remember them the next morning. I really wish Blue Sky would enable this.
So all that planning for Omori, and I just couldn't put it out there on Twitter. But okay, it was whatever. It went to Mastodon, aka, and then Blue Sky. So it is what it is. The Blue Sky audience, Mastodon, they got the news. Sorry, X users. Too bad. And then, unfortunately, this did affect the posting on Twitter, or X. I'm calling it X for the rest of this section, because it was just hilarious that I could not actually tweet anything doing for the most part. I had to basically, especially at the Yen Press panel, it looked like I was back. I was able to seemingly post normally on X. But then, once again, I think I was able to get the one of the titles, the alts, the Uni manga out on X, and then it said no more posting. You tweet, post not sent. So I could not tweet about the old man yaoi manga that Yen Press had announced. It was just with the Mastodon Blue Sky. I think it was one of the titles I couldn't send out either.
And I know you mentioned that on Twitter there were probably other people live tweeting that people could have followed instead. I will say, over on Blue Sky, not many folks do live tweeting for these things these days. So normally if I see any kinds of these announcements popping up on Blue Sky, they're from the OASG account. We appeared to be kind of some of the last ones. I was joking in one of my Discords over Otakon that I was like, I'm going to revive live tweeting out of spite. As I was trying to live tweet, you know, some of the few panels I went to. But yeah, over on Blue Sky, I can say that we are helping to fill a niche that is still kind of empty at this point, because people just aren't talking about manga as much as they used to, or anime. It's sad.
Mm. Well, we can try to help as we can. But yes, back to... Yeah, Saturday posting was mostly limited on X. So when I went to like the Jane Owl Club panel, I only... Once I was... I think I made one tweet or one... Yeah, one tweet for one thing... Before I just held off and conserved my energy on what to post on Twitter. Sorry, post on X. everyone was just going to Blue Sky or Mastodon. I was just doing the buffer. Just with the buffer, Mastodon, then Blue Sky on for that. The only things I went to X was the Chivalry of a Failed Knight announcement, and then One Apothecary Diaries audiobook news. That was it. Nothing else. Yeah, it was just like that. It also kind of made me not want to post too much about Cross Hearts on Sunday too, because it's like, what was my rate limit? I don't know how many limits I got. Looked like it was mostly fine, but for a large part, that Cross Hearts, both of their Cross Hearts panels was kind of uninteresting, kind of a mess in a way.
Justin didn't even go to the second one at the Manhwa one, so I had to find out from their Blue Sky.
I did go to it, but it was just kind of awkward, and just kind of weird.
In what way was it awkward?
It definitely...
Give me the deets.
Basically, it's... You know how you might just go to a panel and just, like, these are kind of newer type of people just talking for the first time? It kind of seemed like that. And I think in NC Way and panel, like, for the first one they did on Sunday... It looked like it started earlier than it was supposed to start, because I walked in.
Don't do that.
Yeah, I walked in. There was already somebody talking, and it was just I personally was just reading just word for word what was on the screen, which is generally it's generally like a no-no to me. But for what it's worth, I don't really mind that happening. I mean, it didn't get to the important stuff, but I can understand like it being kind of like a no-no. So I can totally accept. But for me, it's like whatever. They started showing videos of certain of their announcements, which is kind of a no-no in the sense that it takes up so much time. They had to actually rush through their panel announcements toward the end of their first one. So from that perspective, it was bad. They had the one guy who I guess is an MC, kind of was trying to like be like the hype man, and it was just kind of awkward and really unnecessary. And they just kind of added to more of the wording. Just kind of made it kind of uninteresting, just kind of worse in some ways. It's just not the type of... I kind of want to make it different from other industry panels, I get it, but like they just needed to compress things. It didn't really work out for a while.
So it sounds like they really needed to do a dry run through with a timer to realize what they need to cut and what was going to work. And also just... It can sometimes be a little hard to tell in advance if someone's going to have the right energy to do crowd work like that, but... It is possible to tell if someone's going to be able to do it. And if you're not good at crowd work, I feel like this is not the best stage to practice and get good at it. You know, I feel like you need to practice in other capacities.
Right. And then we'll get to their like announcements in general, but it did kind of feel like they might be announcing too much too soon. Again, we'll get to their announcements later. But it's a case where they're kind of still kind of new, still gotta get their feet wet. Maybe it's a different environment now. And I obviously still hoping for the best because they obviously are one of the smaller publishers. They have some interesting titles. I think you should focus on a few amount of titles first before just doing all this other stuff now. But again, we'll get
Oh
to
yeah,
that.
I think I got confirmation from them. It was either them or someone else on Blue Sky about when their titles, which had an R19 version and like an R15 version. And I got confirmation from them that they're putting out the R15 version. So,
Interesting.
not when the new ones. I think they're the ones doing Baroness Goes on Strike. It's another manhwa, and I did manage to get them to answer me on Blue Sky saying that no, it's not going to be the sexy one. So, fewer boobs in this one, I guess. Because frankly, that R19 version, it had boobs in it, but it's like, as somebody who possesses boobs myself, they're not very interesting, so you know.
Okay, Helen. Okay, Helen. All right, but just to kind of somewhat wrap this up, because I obviously have so much to talk about, and we still have to get to the license for these for the convention later. It was obviously a weirder convention or a weird convention because we obviously had stuff people, or I think we had some people wondering about just how more corporate it felt like. I was walking around the exhibit hall, and I was unfortunately running into people who were wondering, "Is that AI?" And I was like, "Oh no."
Oh.
Oh no. And I did like feel like I saw some stuff that especially like in some, not all, I mean I was just willing, I wasn't like too deeply into some, but some seemed kind of obvious in for the dealers hall. Like some seemed like they had some AI generated images there. And then for the food courts, by the way, don't eat in the food, don't eat the food at the Javits Center, just don't do it. But I feel like a couple years ago it was much
I
better.
did do that the fir
Not
I did do that the one time I went to ANYC, and that was entirely too much fat and protein for my body for the weekend. I had regrets on that on Monday, so.
Yeah, that did feel like even a couple years ago it was much better, but at least for like the foods, the stuff inside the exhibitors hall was not very good. And then we just had some stuff that looked AI generated like images. I'm like, come on guys. Food's right there. Do better.
Yeah, food photography is surprisingly difficult as somebody who like focused on that for my senior portfolio in college. It's definitely difficult. However, if you can't even show me what the food's gonna look like, there's no way in hell I'm buying it.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because I'm pretty sure like there's like for all the AI generated stuff, there's probably some good food in there for like, because if it's been there for a long time, then yeah, it's probably food. But if you show me something that's AI generated, like what happened? Why are you doing this?
If you can't give a crap enough to tell me what I'm gonna eat, why should I give a crap enough to buy from you? And I'm in DC where we have like a literal food truck mafia going around, actually. So, next year I think I'm gonna like, I don't know, I'm kind of wondering if we can like gamify reporting everything to like the DC Health Department next year. That is something to percolate in my mind for like the next 10 months.
And then I don't recall this being a really good thing the past couple of years, and even last year. But there was announcements a lot of deaths that whole weekend. I'm like, what is happening in that artist alley that's getting these people? Like, what's happening over there? Like, it was very disturbing. What is that?
What was going
No,
on over
there
there?
was it was at least on. I don't know how it ha how if. I don't know how it was mentioned on Blue Sky, but at least on Twitter, there was just so many people, especially artists, saying they had stuff stolen from them, like just like literally, like I guess like it was like a coordinated effort at some point, just to like, just take some stuff. It was really I never had seen that like in the past couple of years. Like I mean, maybe it's happened, and I think I even saw, but at least this year, like I think even I saw like there was a news report about it too. Yeah, lots of artists were just making statements about that. I was like, what? That's really, really
Yeah, I
disturbing.
know. I've seen some folks at furry conventions who now even set up cameras at their table to try and catch people if they're stealing anything. Especially since if you're selling at a furry convention, you might be selling, stuff that's worth a few hundred dollars each. But yeah, I mean, of course, we've all seen the warnings over the years of, keep your money with you in like a money belt, don't have something easy to grab, lock everything down. But it sounds like this is all going even beyond that, which is, that's fucking rude,
Yeah, like you pay,
at the very
that
least.
it's not what you want. Like you pay for these, like you got people paying for these tickets, and if you're just going there to pay for it and steal stuff, then what's wrong with
It's
you?
not like it's food, which, is, I can sometimes understand if people are gonna be stealing food, but this isn't like, low down on Maslow's, you know, basic hierarchy of needs or anything.
And then these artists already pay enough to get boot, like space at the convention. You're just gonna steal like that? There's no, not great. It's not great at all. I will just add that they, it's over the past couple of years. I still kind of remember what it just had so many miserable lines just to get to panels and everything. But at least for like the past this year and even last year, like the line management is so much better. So we'll give it. I just hope that continues.
Yay.
Always good. I did hear people saying that things were oversold, like tickets were oversold for Saturday, and I could probably figure that. Yeah, it was a lot of people on Saturday. But I think I was mostly underground or like on the lower floors. I didn't really get to like the exhibit hall that much. And then on Saturday I went to the Blank Canvas premiere at the Japan Society. So that was fun. I'm not gonna get too much into that because that was kind of more off. And New York City, but Higashimura is a
Did you get anything signed
she's a
there?
riot. I wish I had brought something. My Blank Canvas manga. I totally forgot to bring it. And frankly, I was just tired. It was like 10. That the whole the showing ended at like 10 something, and I was just like, I need to get home. And then I got the Crosshearts. Well, granted, Crosshearts started a little later, but still, I was wiped. I didn't bring a manga. There was a long line for that for the signing. So I was just like, okay, I can't do this. I'm too old for this now. I'm gonna.
Yeah, I heard people talking about that. Or once again, Caitlin from AniFem was posting that I don't know if this is for press or just given out at the movie showing, but they were giving out these little acrylic standees of Higashimura, which are just hilarious looking. She posted some pictures on Blue Sky. I sent you the link so you can look at it later.
Okay. But yeah, Higashimura is a riot. I know there's some. I imagine gonna be some interviews from this convention involving her. I'm gonna look forward to reading all of them. She's great. She's fantastic.
Yeah, just from the way she writes characters, and also even how, like, I've read some but not all of Blank Canvas, so even from the way she narrates her own life, it doesn't surprise me that she is a hoot to hear in real life.
I need a break, Helen. I've talked a lot. Please, let's get on to the news. We got some news to go over, don't we?
Yeah, it's funny because I just remembered that while you were at Anime NYC, I was helping out the National Book Festival, so. Not only is this my third podcast in 6 days, but 2 days before that, I was working that, so I talked for 6.5 hours that day, and that's why my voice hasn't had a break in like a week at this point. So, while Justin quickly rests up, starting with the news. As had been previously reported, Crunchyroll Store now is, you can still view it no matter what subscription you have to Crunchyroll, but you are only able to make purchases from there if you have one of the upper two subscription tiers. And what you see listed on there is mostly stuff like home goods, apparel, etc. It no longer has any manga, light novels, manhwa, danmei, etc. It has no books for sale anymore. Crunchyroll has not responded to any of this yet, although some places on social media like Sentai have been dunking on them in their social media posts, which has been very funny. And also over is Cool Japan. Yes, I know, folks, none of us have thought about Cool Japan in a while. Reporting from ANN says the Asahi Shimbun, Mainichi Shimbun, and other newspapers reported that Japan's Ministry of Economy, Trade, and Industry had decided to effectively abolish the Cool Japan Fund, the public-private company that the government used to fund projects as part of its Cool Japan initiative. According to these newspapers, MEIT is submitting a budget request for the 2027 fiscal year without money earmarked for the fund.
So we rip Cool Japan, rest in peace, Cool Japan. Is that what we're all saying here?
Did it ever achieve anything? 'Cause I know for all of us, like, if we thought Japan was cool, it was because we actually saw, like, anime and manga, not because of any of these weird-ass initiatives we did. It may have helped fund some of those anime, but I'm not sure. I think they did more along the lines of trying to promote a town as a tourist spot and just n promoting it in a way that would work for a Japanese audience, but not for any kind of international audience, since, as we've mentioned here before, different audiences require different approaches to, you know, announcements, advertising, etc., and sometimes people are just very slow to realize this. Communication comes in many forms, people, and sometimes you have to change your communication style depending on the circumstance. Will I be complaining to my manager tomorrow about some of my coworkers who are not very good at communicating? Abso-fucking-lutely. I have decided to start shit at work. So this is top of mind for me right now.
It made me think about what the, you brought up what did Cool Japan accomplish, and I was like, what did they accomplish? I did a quick Google search, because I was like, were they involved with J-Manga? Remember J-Manga, Helen? Remember that?
Ah, J-Manga.
Remember that?
The one that effectively burned an entire generation of manga readers from digital-only purchases.
But I did, they did instead bring me up to Daisuke. Remember Daisuke, Helen?
Yeah, I do remember Daisuke. I think I've still got some stuff from them. Like, so I remember they had a booth at Otakon one year, and I won some stuff.
Yeah, that was part of what they were funding, and yeah, that the less said.
And there's also a couple things that streamed there, which have barely ever streamed since. Like, Turn A Gundam has streamed there, and then for like a month on the YouTube channel, the Gundam Info YouTube channel. That's like the only times it's ever streamed. So that's the only reason why I still remember Daisuke.
But yeah, we will, I guess. Remember Cool Japan's efforts? Wait, didn't Tokyo Pop get involved with Cool Japan at one point?
Listen, Tokyo Pop does so much weird shit, we're not talking about it.
Okay, but yeah, the point is, they tried, they, Cool Japan tried their
Stu
best.
Stu Levy's unlisted YouTube video recording of talks of investors, stuff like that. I know I sent you the link to that one.
Yeah, I was, I'm just not interested, sorry. It's like, whatever. Like, what is this? Oh, whatever. But yes, we all remember Cool Japan for not really making a dent, or at least trying to make a dent in Stings and not really doing that.
You're going to remember them? I'm not even going to do that.
Look, if we remember Anime Strike, we will certainly remember Cool Japan. Anyways, Suncha is going to switch publication of Yang Kenley Wano to another publisher in Japan to keep everybody updated. The author had a breakdown of relationship with the publisher, or in this case, Manga Up, which is run by Square Enix. The author stated that they got a Switch publisher in Japan. This has been now confirmed. No, obviously, and that's what the publisher is, but well, I guess we'll get that soon enough. So look out for that, I guess, in the future. But at the current point, right now we have English copies, or at least it was planned to have an English release by Square Enix manga and books of Yang Can't Live Alone in September. But once the initial news happened, we were wondering, is this manga going to actually come out? Then it got announced, I think, a few weeks ago or a few days ago that it was not going to be on Manga Up at the end of the month. And then...
Unless you've purchased chapters. Yeah, if you've purchased the chapters, it's still going to be up. So my chapters should be remaining up there because I've unlocked all of them with the free coins.
Right. Correct. But for the English volume release... there's actually still, quote unquote, no word. Okay, I'm saying in quotes, but there's been no word about if it's still getting English release. But the official page has been taken down. Just 404, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, you can't like pre-order it, or it's 404. Square Enix did like send a statement to ANN saying that the company is currently reviewing the situation with all the relevant parties and will provide updates if and when we're in position to comment. But it goes back...
Oh, they're pulping those books.
Going back to Soncha's statement, the sales of translated versions will remain available until the end of their respective publishing agreements. I wonder if it's more challenging for Square Enix themselves to do it because they're the actual publisher themselves. Like, it's one thing if for other foreign publishers, okay, it's not totally related to Square Enix. We can totally do it ourselves, but the author themselves, they have... They don't want to actually publish it within Square Enix, so it might be more challenging for the English version, the English publisher of Square Enix themselves to do this. So, yeah, it's not looking good. I think it's definitely looking like they're not going to publish it, and it's unfortunate because obviously they're really close to actually getting the book out there. But yeah, just a shame.
So someone needs to go do a heist of their warehouse and steal a copy that's definitely already been printed by this point. If the release date is under a month away.
Literally a few weeks from now. Like,
yeah.
A few weeks from now. It's just unfortunate. Like, it's really stuff that you really, when you're licensing a work, you don't think something like this could happen, and yet it happened, and now all that work gone down the drain.
And we're still not entirely sure what happened. The reason that's been given has been a breakdown in communication, so...
No. Breakdown relationship.
That could cover so many things.
Breakdown relationship. It could be communication, like you mentioned, but we don't really know the full story. I mean, unfortunately, we really don't need to know. It's up to the creator, and I guess the...
I want to know. I'm nosy.
Hey, it is what it is. But yeah, well, obviously, I think here, War for Yang Can't Live Alone, and not just from a Japanese publisher standpoint, I think it was one of the more popular titles in general. So once we get word, I imagine some publisher in the English will want to grab the rights for it. So there you go.
And we've got more things that are shutting down in the past couple of weeks. Justin posts the same thought that I had, which is, did Manga Mirai even reach a year? Apparently, this was a service launched by MediaDo, NTT Docomo, Atsuki Group, and MyAnimeList. They jointly developed the service in March 2025, so it did technically last a year, but I'm trying to remember if it did anything good, and I was also trying to remember, was this one of the ones that did stuff with AI? Because that was the message in my group chats. We were like, wait, was this the AI one or was that something else?
Sorta and sorta not, in the sense that they mostly were just porting already available manga to their platform. So something like Viz, Yen Press, stuff like that. They already like just ported that over. There were some titles that they eventually released themselves, which I think it's elaborated in the article what they're doing. I think it's gonna go to Manga Plus or some other platform. I don't know. But there is a way, I think, that's going to get, you can still read those chapters or those manga out of services. But yeah, they just got caught up in the numbers game. There's just too many platforms. Just too many. Sorry.
And then, I think this is actually related to something we talked about last year. NHN, Japan's corporation's free manga app, Komiko, announced it will end service after 13 years. It's scheduled to end on January 6, 2027. The company plans to transfer customers' previous purchases to the Mecha Comic Digital Bookstore. And the ANN article references Pocket Comics, which ended service in English and French last year. Also Korean, the Korean Komiko platform in October 2025 due to business reasons. So I guess all of those were under the same umbrella. Since I remember when Pocket Comics shut down in English and French, and I think we knew about the Korean one as well. I seem to recall we were both speculating if the parent company was going to last much longer, if they were having to cut down on all the spinoffs. And some of those comics have been picked up by other services since then, but there's some that definitely have not been picked up in English. I know because there was a couple where I was like, it'd be nice if you got picked up and also retranslated, because oh boy, the translations on some of those towards the end were getting to be real bad. Just, it's like, I have read some machine-translated scanlations that were much better than this.
Dang.
Not all, but I've definitely read some.
Dang. Tough scene. Very tough scene.
Listen, I just ask that you proofread your stuff so you at least keep the genders consistent for, between word bubbles.
And then I think
I'm setting low bars here, Justin.
And then the comics industry news source, ICP2, I think this was during their manga week. They reported that publisher HarperCollins is launching the Kaze manga imprint in the United States. If the Kaze name sounds familiar, yes, it was that French publisher that I think got rolled, or I think Crunchyroll had bought that at one point, then eventually HarperCollins bought the rights to Kaze.
Which is fascinating, because that was one of the big publishers in French for manga.
It was obviously, and it was later reported by The Beat that the imprint is going to publish manga, manhwa, and manhwa, and it's going to launch in fall 2027. The Harper Alley and Kaze publisher Andrew Arnold is leading the imprint. They did have a panel at Anime New York City. No announcements, no announcements. They just kind of laid like a roadmap. So obviously going to start in fall 2027 with a couple titles, and they're going to obviously expand in 2028 and 2029. But again, this is nothing really new. It's just stuff that will happen. Obviously, we'll just wait until they actually start announcing new stuff. But yes, it's just what we needed, hella. Another new publisher in this industry. Just what we needed, right?
I mean, I will definitely take more publishers, because A, that means more stuff can get licensed, and B, HarperCollins is a big U.S. company, of course, but we're starting to have a lack of big companies, big manga publishers in the U.S. that aren't owned by a Japanese company. Like, we don't have any big ones left, they're all just the smaller outfits, so I'm kind of like, yeah, let them fight, you know, let's get some corporate infighting going on. And I know a lot of stuff that Kaze had licensed over the years has also been licensed by different companies in English, since, you know, they license a lot of big titles, you know, ones that also would get picked up here. So I don't know how much any of those contacts they may have had on the French side will transfer over to English, but I definitely find it interesting that HarperCollins is looking to get into manga now. Yeah, which I guess also means that the American publishing industry sees manga as a place to still have growth and profits in.
One other thing, and this was elaborated to me, I think, it was something I read, or maybe I saw some time ago, like sales in Japan, they're kind of not the same as they used to be, so they're just more, Japanese publishers were wanting to expand overseas. That's why I was thinking Japanese publishers wanted to publish on their own, a little misguidedly, when you see what they want to, how they want to translate and localize the series. But
once again, Japanese publishers, you may think we will just eat up anything you put out, but if it has a whiff of AI to it, we are going to fucking refuse to buy it.
So yeah, we're in that state where they're trying to make more money, and the way you do it is just by extending overseas, but it also leads to something like Kaze, who did state during their panel they're not going to do AI anything with their works. It's going to be human looked at, localized, edited, etc., etc. So yeah, that we're in that state where I guess they're just looking to have most. It's the catch-22 of it benefiting us, but they're also a detriment at the same time. But we'll see how it shakes out moving forward.
All right, and then we've got a number of hiatuses to report from this past couple of weeks. Fall in Love, You False Angels by Koko Uzuki is going to go on hiatus as Uzuki is focusing on her health and adjusting to her schedule. Manga's slated return in Kodansha's Dessert magazine in November. Bungo Stray Dog's Stormbringer is also going on hiatus due to the health of the author Shiwasu Hoshikawa. The magazine is going to announce at a later date when the manga will return, although they are describing this as going to be a long-term hiatus. And the Kimono Jihen manga is also going on hiatus since Sho Aimoto announced on the site formerly known as Twitter that her brother passed away in mid-August. So the manga will not be in the October issue of Shueisha's Jump SQ magazine, but it is scheduled to return in the November issue, which comes out on October 2nd. Because as I've mentioned before, I do not understand how Japan dates these magazines.
We don't have too many deaths to report. One's really...
Unlike in the rest of the world, where this was a roller coaster of a week.
Unfortunately, we lost some people for sure. You can be like, yeah, they were getting up in age, but still, a loss is a loss. It's a really tough loss. Gonna start with Dave Lampier. The website Bleeding Cool reported that comic book and manga letterer Dave Lampier died August 18th at 58 from complications related to diabetes. This was shared by his sister Tara Lampier on Facebook August 22nd. He mostly was more American comics, so he worked for DC and Marvel and a couple other publishers like that. But for manga, he worked as a letterer for Beyblade, Bleach, Denshiro, Toko, and Oyayu, Behime Infinity. These are, I think, like in the mid-2000s for a couple of these. I saw one was a CMX title. really long time ago.
That's been a while.
I think he's also a award-winning letterer, too, so definitely a really significant loss there. Yep, Eisner, yep, two Eisner Awards, so yep, this is a very, very difficult loss there. And then, again, we had a lot of celebrity deaths this past week. The one we're going to talk about for this one is Transformers voice actor Peter Cullen, who passed away at 85, and according to his family, to TMZ, peacefully, this week at his home in Los Angeles. Mostly known for his voice as Optimus Prime for Transformers, so if you hear... watched or even know of it, any shape or fashion, you've heard the voice, and it is really good. That's one of the big losses for sure. But for me, at least personally, obviously Transformers is big. I'm not disputing that. But for me personally, you heard this voice for Toonami. Growing up watching just all the promos and stuff and commercials, especially for Toonami, for Dragon Ball, a whole bunch of shows, like that was big time. At least on Twitter, a lot of promos for like stuff like Rurouni Kenshin, Perk After Sakura, and Hamtaro popped up. That were just like, how can you make Hamtaro this? That's not even the type of show.
Yeah, people were doing that on Blue Sky, but for stuff like Tenchi Muyo. Like, how do you make Tenchi Muyo sound
right,
good?
Right, like how? Like, you could tell this guy was just super passionate about what he did. He really, you could really sense it from his voice. So yeah, we really lost a really good one. Again, he went peacefully to come to his family, so I mean, it is what it, always talk about death a lot when it happens in this podcast, and a lot of people just go in really unfortunate ways and just tough ways, and a loss is a loss, like I said earlier, but they said peacefully, and only, again, Hobie went peacefully, so.
I've stopped kind of believing those things in obituaries after. When my grandfather passed away quite a few years ago now, he had had an infection at the hospital, and so it was only described in the obituaries as a short illness, and I just felt like it wasn't wrong, but it wasn't right either. Right. So I've stopped trusting those in there.
Understood. No, no worries.
And I will say, for like the rest of this past week, I saw someone sum it up on Blue Sky as, there's a lot of drag show clubs which are going to be making some tough choices this weekend. Dolly Parton tribute or Tim Curry tribute, you know? Of course, you could try to combine both of those into a tribute, but, you know, that's a little tough to come up with an act, you know, in like 3 days. But yeah, this was, sure was a week. And I mean that in the rudest possible way. So moving on. I know we've been talking about Anime NYC, but stuff outside of Anime NYC did happen when it came to licenses. So starting off with those, Hanashi Media, who does light novels, announced that they've licensed the following works: Kei Takano and Shoa Takashima's The Hated Prince's Do-Over, Can Good Deeds Save Me and All These from All These Execution Flags. This is when I suddenly realized I forgot to practice saying all the names for this podcast. Oh no. Ichiro Katawara and Noise, Living the Slow Life as a Demon Lord. The hero says, my tomato field is an unconquerable dungeon. I have many questions about that, but okay. Kagami Yagami and Roha's Shimotsuki-san has a thing for a background character. Takeru Uchida and Imusuki's The Sage of the Forbidden Library, a genius apprentice librarian unlocks the secrets of magic civilization. Hayashi Hoshino and Shunsuke Himuro's The Breeding Man takes on the Sengoku era. With Justin's comment that Seven Seas would definitely classify this as a ghost ship title, which I was having a similar thought as I was reading out that title.
I was looking at the title, and I read the description of it about who this person is going to be breeding. I was just like, well, Seven Seas would put this right in there, and the ghost ship, they would definitely do that for sure.
So we're not talking about animal husbandry here, are we? We're not talking about, like, a farmer.
We're not doing any of that, no.
All right. They also license Kaguya and Kodama's Welcome to Your New World Workplace, The Hellish Front Lines, Lena, Strategist, Age 8. Sir, I think that's a violation of some child labor laws. Alice Nishizaki and Fruit Punches, The Merchant Heiress is Unstoppable with the Power of Money. And finally, Hakuita and Aso's Living It Up in Another World Until I Get Bored, a 30-something nobody's carefree life. My god, that sounds like the dream.
We have Comkey that had their announcements, or an announcement that they're going to add a good amount of Hakusensha titles, looks like particularly Shoujo, to their service in the coming months. Their first title is Sora's Crash Out Schoolgirl and Dengan Teacher, which was added August 21st. Not sure how they were going to roll it out. Are they do this monthly, or is it every 2 weeks? No, really. Very vague about how they're going to announce it. The only thing we got so far is that their image, they have a couple of prominent titles like Karikano, Gakuen Babysitters, Moonchild, just name a few titles. So don't know when they're going to publish it, but it was mostly funny, at least on Twitter. We'd have one prominent letterer, Liz Blakesley. She commented about the pay for Comkey. Not great. $1 a page or something like that. Make sure.
What in the nonsense?
Yeah, $1,000 a page, maybe a few cents if lucky. Yeah. Not.
I don't think that was even acceptable in like 2009.
Not what you are. It's a case where you want to. It's all like titles out that you want to support, but is this really sustainable when you give peanuts to your talent, to your letterers and translators and everybody? Not great.
I ain't sure you can even buy peanuts for that price anymore.
Yeah, so it did temper my excitement for this announcement. But we will obviously see we'll obviously cover the titles that they choose to add in the coming months, whenever they decide to do it.
And then a few more digital-only announcements. Manga Up has added Akina's The Viscount's Porky Portrait, I Married the Knight My Sister Rejected, Sorino Koshi and Taichi Okubo's Unwinding with the Aloof Girl at the Standing Bar, and Ato Sakurai's If Which Then Which. If Which Then Which, which has been put out by Seven Seas in print,
not
I think.
Close.
Was the Empress?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I knew it was one of those two because I was like, I know, I read it for a review and I was disappointed. And finally, just rounding out our pre-ANYC licenses, K-Manga has added Daiki Yamazaki's Golden Phantom. This is a sample pub, as are, I imagine, the Manga Up titles, since that's kind of what Manga Up does.
No,
they're simulpubs once they catch up.
Which, as we talk about which then which, that was already published by Yen Press, so they do a mix. They do simulpubs and then also add stuff that has already been, like...
I feel like everything I read on Manga Up is a simulpub, like Proud to be a Villainess, or now that Talentless Nana is done, I'm just, like, expending all of the points I get every day unlocking chapters for that. So eventually I'll unlock all 120.
My rule of simulpub is if it's, like, literally, like, it just, like, debuted in the publication in Japan, then it's simulpub. But if it already, like, kind of came out, and then you just wait a couple months and then add it, I guess you could say it's simulpub, but at the same time you're just adding a title to your roster because you just licensed it. It's a little awkward.
Yeah. You're right. They're not all simulpubs. I'm just saying the ones I read on there are mostly simulpubs, so I kind of forget that they don't do simulpubs. They don't do just simulpubs.
Fair enough. Now it's time to get to the anime news license, and once again, it's a doozy. I'm going to start with Kodansha because I think they had the biggest announcement in terms of just like, what the heck is wrong with them? Why would they do this? Oh my god, it's that title. They're crazy, but I admire them for this. But first, we're going to start with their print club announcements. They had a good amount. It's going to actually start this week, although this one title actually kind of leaked on their website a few weeks ago. Juri Hanasuka's How to Grow a Love. That's the first one that's going to come out this week. The rest of it's going to come out either December or January of 2027. Oh, it should be December 2026, so at the end of this year, and then January 2027, so obviously next year. Akiye-wise, Abe-kun's Got Me Now, Umishina's I Want to Hold Anokun So Badly I Could Die, Umibachi Yamanaka's Matcha Made in Heaven, and Kuchura's Changes of Heart. So we got the whole digital print titles for here. Then we got TNSK's Trapped on Tape. And then, of course, they announced Joji Morikawa's Hajime no Ippo Fighting Spirit is actually going to be released in omnibus format next year. That's right. Just remember, this was originally announced a few years ago for K-Manga, so it was available to read there. But nobody, the Kodansha's not going to be crazy to put that whole thing in print, right? They're not going to do that. That's too many volumes. They're not going to do that, and they did it. They said, screw it all, we're going to do it. 3-in-1s.
Either that or the Japanese Japanese parent company said, you will do this.
And I want to assume Kodansha US is just fighting, being like, can we at least do it in omnibus? Please, save us. Save our monies. but yes, that obviously...
Yeah, they said 3-in-1. Didn't they also say it was going to be like the first 30 volumes or something like that?
I don't think so. They're going to try to do all of it. Or at least they're going to make an attempt. Right, they're going to at least attempt to do it. I don't know. We'll see how the market just changes every which way. Who knows to actually release all of it. But for now, they're committed to just releasing what they can. They're going to do a hell of it. They're going to catch up to all the Japanese volumes somehow.
I'm just saying, if they can do this now for Hajime no Ippo, can we at least put Chihayafuru in like the print-on-demand club? Like, can we at least do that? I'll accept Omnibus as print on demand.
Why,
you know, I'll do that.
The only reason why, because I've heard that the quality compared, like the quality for, well, according to people I see on like online, the quality is just not very good for the Chiharu digital version. So,
oh no!
So if you get that, you have to actually.
Do you mean like? Do they mean like translation or image quality?
A combination of lettering, and obviously lettering is going to be kind of a pain. I'm not sure about the localization. I mean the translation. Mm-hmm. From what I remember reading of it, I didn't think it was that bad. But the fact is, they're going to have to actually redo a lot of things for that. So it's going to take even longer to actually work on that. They can still do it, mind you. If they can like put out Hajime Ippo, they can still do it. But even that's going to still take, like for Chihayafuru, it's going to take a while. So fingers crossed. I think we're still in a state where Let Your Dreams Be Dreams feel like we're just been licensing and bringing out a whole bunch of stuff that didn't seem possible. So I wouldn't still say no. Actually, if we wouldn't come out in a certain in print format. But yeah, it's in a rough state right now, from what I understand.
It's funny, you mentioned rough lettering, and when I was reading Reincarnated in a Mafia Dating Sim, I was looking at this and I was like, wow, this is the roughest lettering I've seen from a professional release in a while. And so I scrolled back to the copyright page and it just lists like lettering Vibrant. By such and such Vibrant studio. And
yeah.
Yeah, Vibrant Studio. And I'm like, oh, that's never a good sign when they list a studio instead of an actual person doing this. That, to someone who's not well-versed in this, you might think, what's the problem? And it's that there doesn't have to be a problem, but it is in fact always a problem when it's one of those.
Especially when you're spending money and you want the best quality or as the best possible quality as possible, and you can tell it's not the best quality.
Well, thankfully, I am reading all this free thanks to the DC Public Library. Libraries, they're pretty cool.
Before we go into the other news, I did want to point out, it's not licensing, but we have Kanachi House New York that happened last year. Last year happened in Soho. This year it's happening October 9th, or it's going to start October 9th, and it's going to happen in Hudson Yards. I might have no choice but to go.
Is there a market difference between these two locations? Like, is one easier to get to than the other?
It actually kind of is, and for me it's even more close to get to than Soho. I will not elaborate any further on why it's much easier, but I guess actually that's just more...
Now I remember you
actually I take that back. I will elaborate on the fact that you know where Javits Center is? It's in Hudson Yards.
Yeah.
It's in Hudson Yards, so much easier, I think, for people to get to. I mean, it's not that hard to get to Soho, but at the same time, it's much easier to get to Hudson Yards than Soho, just by a little bit.
Mm-hmm. All right, then. Gen Press announced at their panel... Sono Mitru's Hot Night at the Hot Springs Secret Trip number 241. I want to have that many trips to Hot Springs. Sato Kanai's Make It an Eternity. Runta's Interdimensional Memoir. Alt Hanakage's Can I Call You Uni? Which is weird, because that's like Onesan, but Korean. Anyway, they also announced Hachioki Nekono's The Grey Exorcist. Eritoji Shibono's Ubel Blot 2, Knights of the Fallen King, Fudo Fudono, Seal My Lips with a Kiss, Yan Sakai and Ao Nekonabe's The Witch's Conviction, The Beast's Redemption, which is a light novel, so that will be under the Yen On imprint, and Taro Hitsuji and Akitake Azumi's Cause I'm Freedom, also under the Yen On imprint. And then their Ise Press imprint also had its own separate panel, as I understand it, and they announced that they will be licensed Yunhee Na's Whale Star, the Gyeongseong Mermaid. I don't quite know how to pronounce that. I just know that's what Seoul was referred to under Japanese occupation in World War II. Because I was just looking at this title on Webtoon the other day. And they have also licensed Solo Leveling Ragnarok, the novel series, which is a sequel to the original Solo Leveling. This is by Dahl. And they are already publishing the comics, so they are just adding the novel to their lineup.
It's just going Soul Leveling crazy. They're even going to do it in Spanish, Helen.
How are this many fans for this kind of, like, mid-tier premise?
It's actually always interesting what web, especially what Mahua just breaks through. And for some reason, Soul Leveling was the one that did it somehow, some way. Let's see. General Club has, again, lots of announcements at their panel. Yuta, Kijima, and Moto's Being Famous is Neat, going sister rank on livestream. Amigo Kairuda and U35's Feet Fluted Dungeon Delver tune in for Magical Girls and Motion Blur. Takasugi Iwagi and Benio's Middle Age and Bid No More, rising in ranks over drinks with an elite priest. Asazuki and Kyozip's Elegance in Exile, from Alchemy to Luxury with My Art at Night. This is going from J.W. Hearts and couple titles are gonna go to Novel Heart, Maureen Momo and Wim Halus. I don't think you actually pronounce that. Wim Halus. Keep Me Close, Fighting My Home and You. Kotoko and Tsukasa Satsuki's Grinding My Way to a Happy Ending, Employment OP Big Bro, The Making Soul Sister Complex. I'm just throwing out here, by the way, this is one of the few titles I was able to actually read, and it's actually kind of fun. Minami Kashiwa and Suzunosuke's Deja Vu, Betrayal Begets New Beginnings. And then we went to a couple other These are actually JMO Night titles, the following. Next upcoming titles are JMO Night, so that's Boys Love, Shinobu Kuriki and Hiroi Takao's Fraudulent Fiancés, Kaori Shu and Kyo Kitazawa's and Otaku Prince Finds Love and Akiba, and Daizu Konaka and Yo Mizu Kane's Mirror Mirror on the Wall, Who Ate the Poison Apple, Core and All. And well, this one, I think this is a manga, Romeda Ando's Crybaby Love Song. It's the only manga out of that JMO Night line here. They're gonna release the following titles in print. Sadly, still no Trials and Tribulations. Mao Nishiura and Maro's Pens Down, Towards Up, Throw Your Sides to the Wind, with Ryuyu and Daburu's Now I'm a Demon Lord, Happily Ever After, with Monster Girls in My Dungeon, the Light Novel, the Speed Tomb on the Buses. They're gonna also release the manga print next year as well. Ryuku and the Now and Tamar Muto's Pirate to the Duke's Daughter, the manga, not the Light Novel, Quadrillion and ZXC's Beautiful Daydream. This is the first prize of the JMO Club contest, original Light Novel contest winner. Should be the first one. So that's not going to be a print alongside like the other ones they've done in the past, the first ones. So they're going to release, finally, Riku Masur and Juan's Chip River Failed Knights at 3-in-1 Hardcover Collects Editions. So Collection Edition 1 is going to come April 2027.
Was this one that they picked up from someone else?
They picked up from Soul Press a couple years ago, so they have released it digitally, and they should be kind of close to finishing up the series digitally, so it makes now perfect sense to kind of like get that ready for physical publication. So
did Soul Press finish it when they were doing it digitally, or did they get kind of stopped?
I think the last it was either a 4th or 5th volume, that was their last published translation of that. I think that was it, so they didn't get a chance to finish it.
Yeah, because I definitely had a, wait, why now, when I saw that, when somebody accidentally broke Embargo and posted a blog post too early. Woo! So I saw that title on there, and I was like, really, this one?
Oh, yeah, it was fun. Oh, yeah. Sorry for that publication. I'm not going to rat them out, but it was...
Someone clearly, instead of typing in, like, 3 p.m. on, like, Saturday, typed in like 3 p.m. on Friday.
Yeah, it was a very clear, like, it's one thing it is be like posted immediately or whatever, but they clearly just got the date wrong. Unacceptable. Yep. I'm not saying this is still not, it's still unacceptable. They obviously need to pay attention, but it's understandable. They clearly just messed up.
Yeah. It's like, I see what happened here.
And a couple other things that I kind of thought was neat or had to note, they're going to release an audiobook. John Rotman's Atlas, Her, the Combatant, and Him, the Hero. This is the first JMO Club original Night Level grand prize winner. I think they have said that they were going to do this, so it's nice that they finally announced it. And then the volume one of the Apothecary's audiobook is going to come out, I think, September 22nd. It's going to be mostly narrated by Catherine Ho, but they did JMO Club share during the panel that the English voice actor from Mau Mau, Amy Lowe, she was going to do a small part in it. I wasn't sure if it was parts or part. It sounded like he said part. Sam said parts. But then the actual voice actor herself, she commented that she voiced a short author's note at the beginning of the novel. So you can look forward to popular diary for fans who are waiting for an audiobook, can look forward to hearing her announce an author's note.
That's kind of interesting, but... Alright, hope it works out for them. I'm sure it will, because Apothecary Diaries has been golden ever since the anime came out. Over from Seven Seas, they licensed Ringo Ame III and Akiko Kawada's The Duke's Daughter Must Seduce the Demon King, but the Demon King's a girl? This is under their Girls Love label? Do they have a name for that, or...?
It was funny, because they have the imprints, and they have their labels. This is just a label, Girls Love. It's just a label.
Okay, just a label. Okay. Also under the Girls Love label is Ryu Obata's I Wish It Had Just Been Love. Under the Boys Love label, they've got Taoko Nonoshima's Scarlet Thirst, Karen Anzai's My Lips Are Being Targeted, and Nineko Narazaki's Synchronicity Obsession. And then for non-gay titles, I guess, they have licensed Dokuzo Kento Kobayashi Tetsuya and Nekosuke Okuma's Goeta Shock, which is the manga. They are also publishing the light novel, but don't think that's out yet. Hasegawa Roku's Enslaved by My Cats. Again, I think Yen Press, not Yen Press, I think Seven Seas just needs to have a whole imprint now for all their cat manga, because it is going to be a lot.
The next label or the next imprint. Seriously, Seven Seas, come on.
They have also licensed Choho Keiteki Kairu, Miyagi Makoto, and Kanase Bench's Witch and Mercenary. They are publishing the light novels, and they're also publishing the light novels. And just as noted, this is another K-manga work going to Seven Seas instead of Kodansha, the K and K-manga. It's not Korean, it's Kodansha. And they are also putting out a box set of what we were calling the first two seasons, seasons one and season two, of Rikoto Nakamura and Yukiko Nozawa's The 100 Girlfriends Who Really, 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 Really Love You. I think I got enough release in there. Oh, and they're also doing an audiobook version of Toya's A Tale of the Secret Saint Zero. I believe they are already doing an audiobook for the mainline series of A Tale of the Secret Saint. It's kind of fascinating how popular that one has been over at Seven Seas. Or at least I assume it must be popular since they're putting out the light novel, the manga, the prequel version, audiobooks. I know there's been an anime announcement for it yet, but it hasn't come out yet. So always kind of fascinating to see which ones seem to get really popular, you know, in their own small bubbles.
I guess it's fairly, okay, I haven't checked, but it's fairly solid. I don't know if it's like super, super popular, but it obviously is just solid fluff, I think, or solid.
I definitely got a copy or two in my bedroom in my to-read piles, but those to-read piles are kind of turning into mountains at this point, so they have not been touched yet.
And I say
yet.
It's fluff, but I haven't actually read it yet, so I don't know if it's actually fluff. Let's see. Kana had the following announcements at their panel. Messiah Hokusono's Pumpkin Night. Matu's Why We Fall in Love. Kai Kitago's Good Morning Leon. Yutsunagi's Soon the Fall Clears, Yamakujiro's Children of the Afterlife, and Chiaki Ida's Happy at Home. The only other thing I'm going to mention here is the fact that Billy Bat Volume 1 was just totally unavailable in most places. I had to at least ask when Volume 1's getting restocked, and they said sometime in September, so I'm like, I'm holding you guys to it. It's funny, because I went to Pinokania one time and asked them about this, and said, oh, you just missed getting a copy of Volume 1. Like, I literally just missed getting a copy. Like, ah, darn it. Yeah, that was unfortunate.
I remember someone posting on Blue Sky that a local library, might have been the San Francisco library system, had gotten, like, so many digital copies of it because there was just that much demand.
Let's see. I think
I was...
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say I was going to skip ahead a little bit so I could keep doing the manhwa, since Justin does not believe in talking about manhwa, so I just put all the manhwa announcements in here. So, moving a little ahead in our little script we have on the back end, Tokyopop had a number of licenses, both manga and manhwa. On the manga side, they have Yosuke Takahashi and Mimori's Garagarapon. I don't know how you say this, that's too many syllables. Takeshi Nozawa and Yoshimi Nanjo's And Then She Became Mina. Saiki Delico's What Goes On Behind the Scenes. Nashi, Kobe Furukawa, and Dr. Mind's Six, The Paths of Horror, the manga. Kanawa Tachibana, Makiko Saiki, and Aki Sonomi's The Commander's Proposal is Out of the Question. Kyo Mori's Breathe Out, Look at Me. And Eiko Hanada's First Love Begins with the Second Kiss. On the manhwa side, they are bringing over Lily of the Valley by Rangarai and Magic Soup by Kim Peacock and Tropical Armpit. Both of those are single words, no spaces in there. I don't know if that looks as silly in Korean as it does in English, but it looks very silly in English.
Dark Horse didn't have too many announcements, but they have a few. I was in more Gotanabe and H.P. Lovecraft. That just seems to be a match made in heaven for them. So they're going to be over the Case of Charles Dexter Ward in manga form. I believe this is going to be in their similar versions of the other H.P. Lovecraft manga versions. And they also announced they've licensed Hideyuki Kikuchi and Saiko Takaki's Vampire Hunter D, The Rose Princess. This is the manga version. I'm about to talk about a comic version. They're going to release the Vampire Hunter D, Fortress of Blood comic December 16th. So it's going to feature various covers, covers from various artists. One of them is Yoshitaka Amano. So yes, you got a bunch of Vampire D. So somehow not be the only Vampire D announcement we'll be talking about in this section.
Crossed Hearts had a whole bunch of different licenses. So, referring back to that panel that Justin was talking about earlier, they licensed manga and manhwa. On the manga side, they have Sora Mizuki's The Two of Us Can't Stay Mobs, which I believe was so obscure it did not actually have a manga updates page. I think someone had to pull the
It's so
information somewhere
funny.
else.
They had the author name was kind of was incorrect on the, I think one of the pages, so you had to fix that. Yes, it was not a manga updates, which usually does have everything, but it's one of the rare times they don't have everything, but generally speaking, 90% of the time they have everything. They just didn't have this one.
They also license Hada Juban Yamada's Love Beyond the Final Boss, the Hero's Party's Quest for Love. I think, is that Al or I? I think it's Al Chiaki's Where Sea Meets Shore. Higura Sakino's Emma and the Eyes That Bid Farewell. Penguin's Addicted to You. And then over on the manhwa side, they've got a couple of titles which I recognize, which are on the bigger, so they're kind of better known. Moku and Darren Lee's Welcome to the Rose Manor, which is also horror. Vi and Del Su's Flirting with the Villain's Dad, which I've read. It's fun fluff. It's, if the villain's dad marries me, the villain can't be born. Bingo, problem solved. The problem is not, in fact, solved. a Thai comic they licensed for their Glam Beat imprint, Crosswise's The Devil in Me. A Korean novel they've licensed, which will also be under the Glam Beat imprint, An Siwoo's Ink Soaked Into the Ashen Page. Another Korean novel, Chellice's Fairy Trap. And they're launching an in-house imprint, Studio Hearts, for a couple of works. So as I understand it, these are all going to be completely original. A Kiss Before the Gunshot, Doomsday Requiem With You, Chiar Scuro, I believe it is that Italian art term for light and dark, and Soul Guiders.
You're correct.
And they have also launched a novel press for prose works with Why Raeliana Ended Up at the Duke's Mansion. I believe that print for someone's putting that on
It's them.
print. Is that
No,
Seven
Elsa.
Seas? Okay, they're
Yen
putting
Press
that
has the
on.
manhwa, and Crosshouse is going to release the novel.
That's funky. And the abandoned villainess became a
No, you're
zombie.
right. I was like, hold up. Yen Press is not putting out the novel version. Oh, Grant, I guess because it's a manhwa. I don't know, and I don't know. Is it? I guess Easy Press does. They do novels too, right? So I don't know. It's a little weird.
Yeah, Easy Press definitely does some novels because I'm pretty sure I just read some out like 10 minutes ago. I know I put some down somewhere. The Soul Lovely Ragnarok novel for Issei Press.
Oh yeah, that's yeah.
So yeah, they've got a whole bunch of stuff there. I was just trying to remember where Raeliana was since I know she's ended up at a Duke's mansion, but I also know that comic has ended up on places like Tapas and some other places. Just trying to remember where it ended up
I
in
just know that
print.
Yen Press. Oh yeah, the top. You've talked about the novel. Yeah, I don't really know.
Yeah. And Cross Hearts also announced a partnership with the Thai girls' love publisher Lily House to release titles in English. I don't believe The Devil in Me is one of those. I think this is more talking about future releases.
Yeah, it was kind of.
So yeah, it kind of makes sense why they had two whole panels to announce everything.
Yeah, it was a lot of announcements, though. It was a lot. All right. Manga Mavericks at their panel, they announced they licensed Akahashi's Araikun and Haruma Senpai and Yohei Sachiza's Midnight Robot. And then during the panel, Mahjong Pro's Harrison Doan announced during the Manga Mavericks panel that they licensed Nagisa Tsuruaki's Snap Call Kirinji.
Wait, did they like take, did they like hijack the
They
panel or
basically
like?
had a moment where I think Manga Mavericks allowed them to allow Harrison to step up, talk about Mahjong Pro's, and then make his announcements. It was humorous, I won't lie,
If Anime
but
NYC won't give them a
it
panel,
is funny.
then I guess they will rely on
It was funny because no,
friends.
it did something similar. I think at Anime Expo too, where I think they announced a new announcements at Marvel Mavericks panel. So I obviously have a thing. They have a working relationship going right now. But it is still a little humorous that they just can't either at the moment. Well, okay, I was told also by somebody that Harrison Stone wasn't going to be able to be at the convention that long. He was only be there for 2 days. So it's possible he just couldn't really work it out. But it is still funny that he just, oh, good. Also, take the over the panel for a bit and talk about my stuff. Mahjong, baby, let's go.
It does give a sense that they've got a pretty friendly relationship if they're all just apparently cool with each other, sure, just like sure, hyping each other up, which is good.
And then we have Omoi, the ship, I think the final manga announcements from us. We have Omoi announcing at their panel they licensed Momoshiro and Tomoko Mitsuki's Love and Serious Journey. I believe this is going to come late this year or next year, early next year, on their service. So it's obviously been a digital thing on their service. A Snow Fox at the Northern Fort, which they've had in their service already. It's got released in print via Scholastic Graphics. It's slated for fall 2027. They're going to add 45 Titan manga titles to their service. And they're going to add Vegetable Sandwich from Manga Mavericks books to their service. I believe sometime in September. I think late September, but sometime in September.
I kind of want to tease Omoi about how they are like accidentally starting to focus on like Scholastic friendly titles, because I know when Evan was doing his panel at Otakon, they were mentioning kind of what they're trying to focus on. I was thinking to myself, you're doing a bunch of stuff that's like Scholastic suitable. I feel like that is also becoming a focus, even if you're not going to say it.
I would just add that they're kind of still in their early form, because remember they have another title. Funny, I brought this at Anime New York City, but that's being published under the Random House Graphics imprint that they have. What was it called? Darn it, I totally forgot.
I know Hikaru and the Light and, what is the other one? It's not Crescent Band Marching. Or is it that? I don't think that one's gotten a print release yet. Neko Uede? It's not that, is it?
I think that was also Scholastic.
Yeah, but I don't think that's under the... I think that's under the Scholastic imprint. Yeah, I don't think that's under the graphics.
Give me 2 seconds. I think I have it. Somewhere. What's it called? No, this is not it either.
Are you, like, literally reaching across your room for books?
Literally reaching across, because I know I bought it. Yep. Our Aimless Nights. This is published on Inkpop. That's the publisher. And the, that reminds me of the other title. It's not published by Omoi though, so yeah, I'm not gonna bring it up. But yeah, it's still early days for Omoi, so who knows exactly what type of works. Like, will Dekeban Tsuka be published by a print publisher? We'll have to find out.
That would be
we'll
fun.
But yeah, it's still early days, so we'll see what their focus will be moving forward.
And then, I don't think we've mentioned this publisher before, but when Justin told me just to add any manhwa I want to talk about to the script, I just grabbed everything that came up at Anime NYC. So we have a publisher named Publang, which I think focuses on BL. They have licensed Define the Relationship by Fiona and Chada, a manhwa. Both the original novel and manhwa adaptation of The Hunter's Gonna Lay Low. So the original novel is written by 103, and the manhwa is... It features art by Lee Gong, but the adaptation is listed as being by Magma. I'm not sure if that's a person or a studio. And they have also licensed a manhwa by Name of Passion, which was originally written by Yuji, with art by Ganjak, and an adaptation by Hound. Same statement as above, not sure if that's a singular person or a studio. And they have also licensed the web novel Healer by Mechanist. I will say that a lot of manhwa out there are all based off of web novels. It's pretty unusual for me to come across one which is, like, manhwa first. So, basically, anytime you read a manhwa, assume it started out as a kind of web novel. Which does make it interesting to see that they're going for one where I don't think they have an accompanying manhwa to go with it. Also, as I keep complaining, goddammit, I really gotta start figuring out how to pronounce Korean now for this podcast. It was bad over a manga in your ears. I'm like, now I gotta figure out how to pronounce like Mongolian for these names. Like, or Persian, you know? It's like, god damn it. Too many languages.
Good luck, Ellie. Good luck. And then,
I did my best. It was not very good.
A bit of anime announcements, not manga related or even maho related. or any book related in general. Yeah, G Kids, the bastion of home media and theater releases right now, or one of the bastions of homie releases at the moment. They announced that they're paying out, they've licensed, or they have the North American rights to Vampire Hunter: D Bloodlust, and the live action film of Makoto Shinkai's 5 cm/s anime film. It was a little funny because unfortunately, as I may have alluded to when I made my comment about Vampire Hunter: D later, I'm not that familiar with the whole Vampire D craze. I was not really thinking it was, I mean, I knew it was like known and everything, but I didn't.
Oh, was this the one where you texted me saying that you didn't expect
Yeah,
this tweet to
I
blow
did
up as much
not
as it did?
expect it to blow up at
I thought you
all.
would texted me that for
And then
EPO.
one other thing is that there was a little confusion. I didn't realize there was a different type of Vampire Hunter D, nor did I realize that Senta had a version of it already. So it was confusion what type of version this was. It was Bloodlust or some other version, although most people that I saw realized it was Bloodlust. But once I got the press release, I
Yeah,
just said, okay, good. I'll just send that over.
I think this is the good one, and I seem to recall that Justin Savakis of Media OCD and Anime Ego, I think he was saying
Yes,
go buy this one
he
because,
did. It was...
yeah, because he said that they had put out the anime limited version one, which they were like not able to get the really good film print for some reason, but G Kids has managed to get a hold of the really good film print, so this one is going to look really good, apparently.
Vegas, he's very much all about quality here. He knows it. So the fact that he's telling, like, yes, our version had its time. Once the whole media release comes out for this one next year, get that. Get it immediately, basically.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was simply like a better master copy or if they were able to scan it in even higher resolution. Kind of sounds like the quality of the master in Japan was better for this one. And you would think, oh, a master copy, there must be only one. Sometimes there is not. That is, it is not the most technical term, unfortunately, which is weird and annoying.
But yes, that blew up on both social medias. Hell, it's still quieter. It's not that big, but even on Mastodon, that kind of blew up a little bit. So I was like, oh wow, oh wow. I did not realize it was this type of series. Oh wow, you got me. You got me, Vampire Team. Maybe I have to go. I have to go see it. Hell, when it goes in theaters, I'll have to do it.
All right, so in some streaming news, ODK Media's North American streaming platform, Amazia, announced that it is now streaming a selection of 20 episodes of the anime adaptation of Nagano's Chikawa manga with English subtitles and Japanese feed. I don't know much about this except somebody in line for autographs for Ascendance of a Bookworm at Otakon was trying to convince me to watch it, and I was trying to deflect saying, "Nah, that one's too mainstream for me. You know, I'm
What do
not
you mean
interested."
mainstream? Hold
Since
up. What do you mean?
I for some reason, I know people who are like really big into this character and will post a lot about it on like social media and Discord. But I think the reason it came up in discussion is that I think Mine's voice actress also does this character. I think that was the connection. Because people were grumbling since there were some last minute restrictions added onto the autograph, so that was everyone was having to change plans in line real fast.
I mean, I'm just throwing it out here. I mean, I've probably heard of Chikawa before, but it literally blew up because of the movie in Japan. That's how I knew about it. It's like, oh wow, yeah, that okay. I don't think I had much prior knowledge about this whole franchise aside from that. So yeah, it looks like Amnesian TV is taking advantage of the whole thing. So I guess a good timing from the added for free. Let's see. Have a couple cultural announcements to talk about. So they're gonna have the regular At Magic High School, the movie, US Plus Session Arc in theaters in the US and Canada, November 1st, 3rd, and 4th. So we have, I think, both what Japanese subtitle, Japanese, it'll be Japanese sub and English dub. So look out for that in November. And then after it was delisted a few months ago on Crunchyroll, 86 is now back on the service. It has been shown.
Also, unlike what the Variety article states, Crunchyroll has not released Infinity Castle on home media yet. Somebody did not do their due diligence in fact-checking for
In
that
fact
article.
checking, it is a lost art, apparently.
Apparently. The third Mononoke film is coming to Netflix on September 29th, globally, so not just in Japan, we'll be able to see it in English there as well. Retro Crush has added several anime series films from Viz. So by which I mean we're talking about stuff like Naruto the movie, Ninja Class and Clash in the Land of Snow, Sailor Moon R the movie, Bleach the movie, Hellverse, Hunter x Hunter, Phantom Rouge, stuff along those lines. So also included in there is Hikaru no Go, Excel World, Captain Tsubasa, Captain Tsubasa Junior Youth Arc, and Vampire Knight.
Normally I wouldn't actually include this, funny enough, instead of calling in the Million Dollar Pentagram
is but...
to buy it on religious platforms, mostly because they've been adding like the latest versions of these movies to digital platforms for the past couple years after the convention, especially at the Anime City. The only reason I had to note this one, because they're using the all new English dub cast for this particular film. The prior films were done by a different studio, and I think I'm not sure if I was questioning if they were gonna do a new studio for this one, or if they were gonna just like continue with, or I should say, move on with the new English cast. It's also gonna be a question. Like, I did put in a survey a couple years ago that I think it would be better to just kind of roll with the new cast for the future films. But I was wondering, with the past couple of films just being with the old dub cast, if they were going to just make it separate. But it looks like I can't continue the future films with the new English class. So that's something I had to know for sure.
For the old dub cast, were these titles that had been dubbed earlier, or have they just been working with like two different casts at the same time?
These were the ones that initially worked with Discotech when they had the print, the whole media releases for that. So that was a couple years ago. When TMS and Discotech were kind of working together, and then at some point TMS said no more corner releases for you.
I could do this on my own.
I had to note that because I guess it's gonna be how it's gonna be. They're gonna move forward with the new cast for any future film. So that's
also because it's Conan. Here, I thought you were going to say that you wouldn't normally bring this up because you are listening to my pleas to, for the love of God, stop taking 5 minutes to talk about Conan each time, but, well, at least it wasn't 5 minutes this time. Also, licensed for streaming, or rather unlicensed, come November you will no longer be able to watch Crunchyroll anime on your Nintendo Switch. Is this for the Switch 1 and the Switch 2, or just the Switch 1? Switch 1. Okay, so the one that I have, so not the Switch 2. The one that Justin will be getting for Fortune's Weave.
It's a funny thing, because originally this was the Funimation app, but obviously Funimation doesn't exist anymore.
Has perished.
So I eventually have to get rolled over to the Crunchyroll app. But, well, we're now using other better TV platforms, or maybe just services, aside from the Switch. There you go.
And I would imagine that since Nintendo is now focusing on the Switch 2 instead of the Switch 1, that we'll probably see other apps discontinuing service future.
I will just point out, there are not many home media platforms on the Switch. So, nothing Hulu, no High Dive, none of that. That's why it was actually kind of funny. They even had Funimation on there that one time.
Yeah, Genshin Impact never came out for the Switch, but, maybe someday it will. The Switch 2, anyway.
Oh, it did.
And, no, Genshin Impact never came out on the Switch. It's on mobile, so it's on, your iOS devices and PC, so not, like, Mac computers, but, like, PC computers. And it is on PlayStation and Xbox, but, nope.
Okay.
Every year, I have to, for the annual big update, I have to do a complicated dance on my iPad to try to fit it on there. Just shoving it in. It would be easier if my iPad didn't need, 20 fucking gigs for, system iOS. It's like, don't take up, a third of my space when you say you've only got 64 gigs. No, that should just be counted in somehow else. But that's a different complaint. And we're going to start the weird news a little early because this one is also kind of weird news. Taiwanese streaming service Bahamut Anime Crazy halted its streaming of Chainsmoker Cat in Hong Kong on Monday after Hong Kong's Department of Health sent the service a letter telling it that the show's content was in violation of Hong Kong's smoking public health ordinance, which prohibits placing a smoking product advertisement on the internet. I feel like if this was going to be a problem, you should have thought of it sooner. Like, maybe this is just really obscure and that's why they didn't think about it, but, it's in the title. And then a few days later, Media Lake Entertainment's anime streaming service, Anione Asia, also removed the anime. Quoting ANN, the service posted a notice that explained the removal was to, quote, comply with local government regulations in relevant markets. So maybe just nobody read, like, what you can and cannot put on the internet in Hong Kong.
The whole point is that they probably thought they can get away with it, and then eventually somebody caught them.
Well, we're about to talk about, you know, people just reporting things to the Chinese government when they get mad at them. So, weird news time?
The real weird news time. That the streaming thing was weird. This is somehow weirder.
All right, you want to do it or should I?
You might be more... You added more details to this than I missed, so...
All right. I am unfamiliar with this series, but I have friends who are, so I heard details from multiple friends, actually. Libre Publishing in Japan announced a manga adaptation of Ro Bao Bu Chiro's The Husky and His White Cat, Shizune, which I believe the Chinese title for it is Erha Heita De Bai Mao Shizune. Again, I apologize, Chinese is not my strong point. At least I need my little diacritic marks. I need to know which direction I'm taking these tones. Anyway, they announced a manga adaptation of that Danmei novel. The adaptation was to be done by Ayano Yamane, who one of my friends had sent me a link to, is apparently the Japanese mother of Toxic Yaoi. The adaptation was set to debut in the December issue of Biblo's B-Boy Gold Boys Love magazine, which would come out on October 28th in print, again with the weird dates. But the announcement was met with backlash from friends on social media who accused the artist of anti-Chinese and anti-Korean sentiments in previous social media posts. So Yamane has since withdrawn from the manga adaptation and prefaced the announcement by apologizing for previous posts on social media which caused discomfort and concern. Libre Publishing has announced minutes before that post that the manga adaptation of the project has been suspended. A friend of mine was telling me that there have apparently been multiple attempts to adapt this, I think to like live action, manga, manhwa, etc. And they have all faced extreme fan backlash. Like, apparently this is a pretty toxic fandom. My friend was saying, like, more toxic than the Untamed one. And apparently, as is wont in, you know, the really toxic Chinese fandoms, one of the preferred methods of I'm going to bully the creator into doing what I want is I'm going to report your stuff to the Chinese government, you know, for, like, indecency and stuff like that. Which is why you can no longer access AO3 in China. Because people, like, reported that all to the government years ago over some stuff with the Untamed fanfiction. Folks, I cannot make this up. It is, as an American, I say this is an especially unhinged level of unhingement. And America has had its fair levels of unhinged fandom. So yeah, this is just wild all around. The announcement and backlash came within, like, 2 days of each other. I don't actually know what the posts were that were anti-Chinese and anti-Korean. I've seen people saying these online, but I did not actually see any of those myself, so I am kind of curious what exactly they said. Totally possible, because there are definitely Japanese creators who are just unrepentantly racist towards Chinese and Koreans. I do not see the issue with it.
Yeah,
but, it's kind of wild.
It did remind me of a... When this news broke, it did remind me of what happened when the new Life in Another World, which was a light novel, it was about to be anime when that got announced. Then people brought up, oh yeah, they look at the description of this. Why does this seem kind of racist and weird? And it blew up on Twitter. We talk about Twitter now, but still, Twitter back then, it blew up then, and eventually that got too many people noticing this, and that had to get the author to apologize for all of his past tweets, and this eventually got the anime to be eventually canceled.
Again, as an American, it's kind of weird because, like, if you do a racism in America, you're pretty cognizant you're doing a racism, to be kind of cutesy about it. Here, so many of the times, it seems like people have just not thought about saying things like, God, whoever it was recently who said something that, like, you know, Pakistanis have, like, unattractive heads that show they're, like, stupid, or whoever said that wild bullshit. Like, people just do not seem to always comprehend it, and it's just nutso. From an outside perspective, it's just like, what is going on in people's heads? I do not understand. I'm sure that not every single person in Japan is like this. I'm very sure about that. But for the folks who are, it's just like insane.
But you brought up the fan thing. I had no clue this particular title had this much of a fan backlash type of reaction. That's
apparently this fandom is one of the more toxic ones out there.
Just worse, like, granted, this particular one may be legitimate because of you can easily just find what Yamane has said online, and I guess she had to apologize for it, so it must have been definitely there.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get one particular series that's getting this type of backlash for any type of adaption of a novel, that's a little worrisome.
People just get really specific when their series are about boys kissing, which I believe happens in this one because it is Danmei. But you know, people sometimes just get really specific about that. Like, I have some acquaintances who are bemoaning the fact that there are now a whole bunch of heated rivalry fans who are now getting into like real life hockey. And you know, plenty of them are fine people, but there are some people who are unhinged in ways that apparently match the last time hockey had a whole bunch of really unhinged real person fanfic going on. And apparently that was unhinged enough. So apparently it is like, yeah, I'm talking to my old friends again, and this is real weird. The people need to stop. So much about, what was the phrase used? Boy aquariums? You know, just...
I'm not sure I should be hearing.
It's fine. Just people getting really particular about how they think relationships, both real and fictional, should go forth.
Okay. Gonna move on to one really weird news story to another really weird news story. This one that involves lots of governments and everything. Oh no. So yes, you had to sit tight on this one. It's kind of long, but I will kind of basically shorten it. French President Emmanuel Macron announced a new 6 billion euro, which is about US 7 billion, US 7 billion theme park project. So we're gonna have theme parks somewhere in France, or yeah, his list Sendry, Sergei Pontoise, very famous south of Paris. The Japan Times newspaper reported that Macron's office said one of the theme parks is expected to be manga themed, and then we have the Japan Science and British public broadcast of BBC further specifying that the theme park is expected to be themed on the Dragon Ball series. It is important to note.
And yeah, co-funded by Saudi Arabia.
It's important to note that Macron stated that France has partnered with apparently the greatest peoples in the world, the great Saudi Arabian investment company, Quetta Investment Company, a subsidiary of Saudi Arabia's sovereign wealth fund and funder of Saudi Arabia's planned Dragon Ball theme park. Oh boy. I'm sure this is going to go over well. But needless to say, a couple days later, French news outlet Le Monde reported that the project has now received approval from the Dragon Ball rights holders. So this would be Burst Theater, which is the late Akira Toriyama studio, Shueisha, and obviously for the anime rights, Toei Animation. According to Le Monde, several sources familiar with the project, seeing on condition of anonymity, confirmed that the proposal has not, at least not yet, secured the central golden ticket. In other words, we have a lot of stuff. He said, and this was public, but then we have, within the internally, C said, wait, no, there's no, we don't have approval for this yet. Somebody is wrong. Somebody is very wrong.
That's like the most important part to get right, too. You know, like, first you need the licensing agreement before you do anything like this.
We just, like, make up our own licenses, I guess. We say, oh, we can do this and that. No. We need to actually get this approved. Approval? Who needs approval nowadays?
Yeah, and it was funny because in my circles, people were already kind of side-eyeing this even before that part came out, since a lot of Saudi Arabia investments and such are tied to the government because of just how money is made there. A lot of it comes from oil fields, which are, you know, all owned by the government. And the Saudi Arabia government has very specific views on what it thinks people like women, folks who are not straight, etc., should be doing. So it's like, I don't really want them to be funding these things anyway, because y'all are committing some human rights violations on the extreme end. And then this on top of it was just like, wow, that's kind of wild. And people have probably noticed over the years that Saudi Arabia is definitely trying to move more into the Western pop culture sphere, trying to become, you know, a destination for things like that, like golf tournaments, gaming tournaments.
Evo Japan, yeah.
Yeah, several years ago, they had a collaboration with the Japanese cosplay competition, World Cosplay Summit, and they were kind of doing like a mini thing there with teams from different countries coming in. And I know that the people who organize Team Canada, so the folks who in Canada set up how they're going to do their qualifiers and determine what team they're sending every year, they refused, citing, the human rights violations if you are queer, and a hell of a lot of cosplayers are queer. And so the people who are organizing that event in Saudi Arabia went behind their backs to contact other people to ha so they could still have a Team Canada representative. So that was a whole kettle of worms. So, yeah, no, and of course, just building up on this after years and years, it just means it's like I am now viewing anything you suggest with even more suspicion. Once again, I am sure there are many nice, great people who are citizens of Saudi Arabia, but your government? I have a lot of questions about your government. I have a lot of questions about our own government, too, so it's not personal. Although this is even funnier than Crunchyroll announcing they're going to be holding an anime summit pretty soon of all these big name guests and having some of those announced guests, like Del Toro, tweeting out on Twitter, "Nope, not me, no voy." We will definitely be talking about that in a future episode once we get more details about what the hell is going on there, but
Once
this
we know
is
who's actually,
even more
once
embarrassing
we know
than
who
that.
actually messed up in the whole communication department, we'll definitely know unless we find out they got fired.
Yeah, because I sent you something and then you sent me something like, "Hey, wait, but." So, like, people who, it definitely seems like some teams were not talking to each other for that. And then, in a reoccurring theme we've had going on the past year or two here, hey, Justin, guess which old shoujo manga is getting an anime adaptation now?
Wow.
Or a live action show, it's close
It's there.
enough.
It's not getting a live action, but you would think that something like Please Save My Earth, why would we think about that now in 2026 or what, 2027?
And it's funny because with each one of these, they progressively have more and more questionable romances at the center of them. Like, I'm not going to say people shouldn't read Please Save My Earth for that, because I have enjoyed what I've read of that one. But it's like every single time one of these comes up, it has even more questionable romances going on than the last one. And it's like, ah, man, the internet is so not ready for the discourse that involves 90s shoujo manga. Just. The internet is not ready for it. The Zoomers don't know how to handle this. Don't know how to handle the mind splitting that goes between I like this series, but I don't like this part of it. Anyway, it's going to stream exclusively on Amazon Prime Video worldwide in fall 2027. Since it is Amazon Prime, I imagine that absolutely nobody in our circles will be watching it and talking about it.
This definitely means the anime is in the works, right? This totally means that, right?
I mean, that's not an unreasonable guess at this point.
There is no such thing as final manga. I have come to the conclusion that, a long time ago, somebody used to work for an industry. They had mentioned this one time that when listing or working on like manga covers and stuff like that, they want to have final on their title, but the Japanese company insists, no, don't put final on there. The publisher, the creator made it. They may revive it. They may want to bring it back or something like that. This is pretty much why.
I remember this being an issue of Horimiya a couple of
It
years
is
ago.
indeed a Horimiya. This is another case, right? Yep. Put final. Yen Press put final on Horimiya, thinking that's it, and then they come out with another fight. Japan, so funny. But yes, Minari Endo announced on Twitter that a new sequel series for her Miraholic manga, this is titled Miraholic Sono Ato no 12 Kagetsu no Onohashi, it's going to launch in Kadokawa's monthly comic, a live magazine, and this came out this past week on August 27th. So, yes, if you wanted more Miraholic after all these years, you got it. There you go.
Speaking of comp titles, I'm not sure the Zoomers can handle, since I seem to recall that one involved a lot of cross-dressing in a way that was questionable as the appeal. So, yeah.
I'm not sure about this other title that why are we doing this to it? Why Bakugan, though, I guess it's really popular in Japan, but are we really gonna do this? So yeah, TMS, and it is not April Fool's joke, by the way. TMS Anime had announced that Bakugan Retsu Kao wa Isekai Tensai Shitemo Iko ni Kawaman. This is a spin-off manga Keisuke Itsukagi's Baki manga is receiving a TV anime adaptation. I'm just like, not a, how can we do this? Isn't the isekai well and dry now? Yes, you're throwing in a Baki, an established character type of thing, but still, stop. Stop it.
Wait, does this mean that regular Baki is in fact not an isekai, that it is existing, supposed to be existing in our actual real world by comparison?
I guess.
That's slightly terrifying.
Terrifying.
In a world, in a reality, where you could do these sorts of things to the human body in a
Oh
fight.
boy, now we're gonna have this particular Baki character doing so many certain things to all these isekai characters, all these fantasy characters. Oh god, they're so screwed.
And I know you mentioned this as a wild collaboration, but I feel like after we've just been talking about this one doesn't even feel as wild. Universal Studios Japan announced that it has partnered with the massively popular anime series One Piece and Detective Conan for a line of collaboration merchandise celebrating the theme park's 25th anniversary. So, one set is going to feature Luffy at the Jurassic Park attraction interacting with a T-Rex, and the Conan collaboration is going to have Conan and Dr. Agasaya paying homage to Marty McFly and Doc Brown in Back to the Future's iconic movie poster.
Get your shirt.
You know, that also, that actually feels kind of brilliant for Conan, considering he kind of turns back time on himself, you know, turning back into a kid, but
Yeah,
that's
no,
funny.
I totally. That's why I said what I did. Yeah. So yes, those in Japan, get your shirt, mug, tote bag, and slash or figure set here for one of these. They both do different things, so you get one or the other. But yeah, those two are really popular, and I guess they're crossing over with other popular type of franchises. Yay.
I know very little about One Piece, but yeah, I think Luffy could beat a T-Rex in a fight. I don't know how the fight would go, but I have confidence in him.
Have another collab to happen, Helen.
Yeah, so American donut chain Krispy Kreme, which is mostly East Coast based, I think, announced that a line of Pokemon-inspired donuts in celebration of Pokemon's 30th anniversary are coming soon. They're going to feature donuts based off of Pikachu, Lemon, Jigglypuff, Strawberry, Charmander, Caramel of Chocolate Filling, Bulbasaur, Vanilla, and Squirtle Cotton Candy, as well as the iconic Pokeball, Vanilla and Chocolate Icing with Sprinkles. This is making me very sad that the donut place in my workplace is a Dunkin' Donuts, not a Krispy Kreme. Although there aren't even too many
There
Krispy
is
Kremes
not.
up here.
There is not.
That's kind of more of a southern one. Like, the big thing was in North Carolina, they were the donut place. Dunkin' kind of has the Northeast, and Krispy Kreme kind of has like the Southeast.
I
So,
feel like there was a lot more Krispy Kremes like way back when in New York at least, but I don't know too many Krispy Kremes that are around anymore. I was trying to think if there's one back in
I feel
the
like
station, but I don't remember.
I feel like I hadn't encountered them until I moved down to North Carolina, because I do not remember them really being in like the Cleveland area when I was growing up, and I just would not have been paying attention to donuts in the time when I originally lived in DC before I started moving around as a kid.
And to finally close out this episode, we are going back again in time, but this time with the Japanese voice of Goku, Masako Nozawa, revealed a new line of apparel for her 90th birthday on Saturday. First of all, congratulations, 90s, long time. This new line of apparel,
Maybe I'll be
right?
so
Yep,
lucky.
sure. This new line, and also relatively healthy too, right? This new line of apparel will be released by Japanese voice acting merchandise and apparel brand Favoluck. I'm not sure you noticed that, but go with that. The first wave of the Ozawa collection includes shirts, sweatshirts, pouches, tote bags, shirts, shorts, and a baseball hat depicting the voice acting icon from her youth and her later years. So yes, you get to, I guess, own her when she's, I guess, a 20-year-old, 20-something. How far back are they going here?
That's it, folks. We survived a long recording and have fun editing this, Justin.
Yay!
I have been knitting this entire time and I'm still not done with this dang scarf yet. I'm actually
You're
kind of
gonna
annoyed
keep
at that
going. You're
part.
gonna work. We're gonna have the rest of the night. Ha!
I am so close to being done with this scarf. I don't know why it's not done yet. I'm getting kind of annoyed at it, frankly.
Maybe you'll have better concentration when we're done with this podcast. So where can we find you, Helen?
Oh no, Justin, I am like actively knitting as I'm talking to you. Like, this is easy. Although I cannot type and knit at the same time, so if folks are going to go see what I'm doing on Blue Sky at Wandering Dreamer, I will have to give up my knitting time to do that. This podcast also went on so long that I finally started doing that thread of the silliest Japanese pen names that I can find. I actually finally started up that thread because this was a long episode, folks. And you can find the other podcast I co-host at Manga in Your Ears. That's the name you can find us on for any of your podcasting services. But on Blue Sky, we are lumped together under the Taiku Podcast. That is T-A-I-I-K-U Podcast. Also the name of our website. We will have that episode of Manhwa in Your Ears that I did up hopefully soon. I just need to edit it. But otherwise, our latest episode was talking about Library Wars, Love and War, which was the one of the manga adaptations that we got over here. At which point, I was talking about, yeah, sometimes you do come across people in a library who are trying to tear things out of a book with a knife. And sometimes people really do get lost in the stacks. This is all surprisingly accurate for a manga which is about a conflict between a state and local government over freedom of expression. And we also talked about A Witch in Mongol in that same episode. Justin, where can people find you until you were consumed by Fortune's Weave?
Yep, so on Twitter, everybody's favorite site, at Communist Konomi.
Who is saying this, Justin? I need some sourcing on that.
Check out the Yoshi. Obviously, we have the social media accounts on Twitter, but also Mastodon, Blue Sky. Obviously, you can check out Yoshi.com. For recent futures, but also hopefully this week or at least next week, you'll see a bunch of Anime New York City content. Content, yeah!
No, not the content.
The big C word. The big C
no.
Word.
Just call it pictures. Or blogs.
Blogs in 2026. Blogs in 2026. You can follow the Ocean Podcast, Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, or add to any artists that you have. You can subscribe to email or add to any artists that you have. YouTube rating and review. Until next time, everybody, bye.
See ya.